number three, please. United States versus Angelo Woods.
We please the court. Good morning, Your Honors, and good morning to you, Mr. Warden. My name is James McKinley. I'm with the Federal Defender's Office in Indianapolis. I would say that this is the second case that I've had the privilege to argue before this court in as many days, and the privilege of being here is surpassed only by the genuine thrill of driving from that bridge in the expressway to downtown Chicago. I represented Angelo Woods at trial last October, and I'm representing him in this appeal of his sentence following his conviction for the offense of escape based on his walk away from the federal prison camp in Terre Haute. I think I've probably tried about as many cases as any attorney in my judicial district in the past 10 years, but this is my first escape case. And in discussing with Mr. Woods the wisdom of proceeding trial, it was pointed out that absent a duress defense or an insanity defense or some type of kidnapping or alien abduction defense, that this is a difficult case to try and defend. Basically, the government has to prove two things: that you're incarcerated and that you're gone. That simplistic view of the case didn't square very well with Mr. Woods' technical reading of the statute and technical reading of the specific language in the indictment in this case, and he elected to proceed to trial to, in his words, test the legitimacy of the indictment to challenge the applicability of the statute to his specific conduct. Basically, his theory was this. The escape statute, Section 751, envisions two situations. Number one, where a person escapes from the custody of the Attorney General or his representative, or number two, where a person escapes from a facility in which they are incarcerated pursuant to a direction or directive of the Attorney General. Now, with respect to the indictment of this case, it alleged basically both prongs of the escape statute. With respect to the first way of violating the statute, that is, escape from the Attorney General or his representative, the indictment alleged that he was in custody of a specific representative of the Attorney General, that being the Director of the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and Mr. Woods maintained that he was not technically in custody of a specific representative identified in the indictment, that he was not in custody of the...
Well, he might be technically in his custody, but he was not actually in his custody.
He indicated that he was not actually in his custody. He was in custody of the camp administrator of the federal camp in Terre Haute.
Interesting theory.
And because the language of the indictment specifically identified the director of the Federal Bureau of Prisons, he maintained that became a material element of the offense, and that's what the government was required to prove. With respect to the second prong of 751, that is, to the extent that it proscribes escape from an institution or facility in which the person is confined pursuant to a directive of the Attorney General, Mr. Woods maintained that it was the United States District Court from the Northern District of Indiana who had originally directed him to be confined in the U.S. Bureau of Prisons, not the Attorney General. We raised these issues with the District Court. The District Court wasn't impressed, wasn't persuaded, denied our Rule 29 motion.
You admired the argument,
and
you admired the argument even if you didn't believe it.
Well, he didn't find it at all persuasive. I'm not persuaded this court would find it persuasive, and I didn't raise those issues here, but that's beside the point. The point is, to Mr. Woods, these were issues that could only be brought to bear and only be raised by proceeding to trial. And they were issues that he maintained were not related to factual guilt, and in his view, they were like challenges to the applicability of the statute or the applicability of the indictment to the conduct alleged in the indictment. And he maintains that he was otherwise eligible for the acceptance of responsibility adjustment. He indicated that you look at the criteria that this court has set forth for obtaining that adjustment, that being the person showing sincere remorse or contrition for the offense. Well, he turned himself in. And during allocution at sentencing, I think it's quite clear that he had that he was remorseful and regretted what he had done. With respect to the other components of the other criteria, truthfully admitting his conduct, well, he did that when he surrendered in New York a month after he had walked away. With regard to neither falsely denying or frivolously contesting relevant conduct, there really wasn't any relevant conduct here for him to contest or deny. The district court nonetheless denied the acceptance of responsibility adjustment here because the district court indicated the challenges to the indictment were not constitutional challenges to the statute. And in that regard, I think the district court may be reading the adjustment for acceptance of responsibility provision too narrowly. There was a subjective good faith challenge on the part of my client concerning these issues that he raised, and he should not be categorically excluded from consideration for the acceptance of responsibility adjustment. With respect to the second issue raised in our brief, we recognize that we, of course, have a even more difficult uphill battle in asking this court to reverse its existing precedent as it applies to the guideline section providing for a four-level reduction for escape from a non-secure custody of a facility similar to a community correction center or halfway house. In that regard, Your Honor, the custody in a federal prison camp is undeniably non-secure custody under the definition in the guidelines. And the sparse legislative history of that particular subsection, we submit, supports the notion that the Sentencing Commission was, in fact, interested in providing reduced sentences for those persons who escape from less secure facilities. Such escapes by walkaway, like in this case, certainly do not present potential for violence, the potential for property damage and damage injury to persons and other dangers found in going over the wall of a secure facility.
Where is the line? Where did you find the wall? Where is the line? Is it in places where you have work release and you're only in there part of the time?
Mr. Woods had maintained that because of person status in a community, in a federal prison camp, technically the BOP designates them as having community custody classification, that's the terminology that they use, that makes the facility similar enough to a community corrections facility where they are able or eligible to work, to go to work while they're staying at a community correction center.
Well, he wasn't eligible to go to work for
that. No, he was not.
And
although he did have what they call community custody classification, he was not eligible to leave the grounds to work in the community.
Yeah, so it doesn't have high fences around it.
That is correct. There is no police. There's no physical perimeter, no armed guard, there's no there's physical perimeter, but not, wall or fence or a specific designated area. And given the relatively relaxed security at a federal prison camp, we submit that he should not be deprived of that four-level reduction. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm here to the court. My name is James Worden. I represent the gentleman here today, as I did before the district court as well. And as Mr. McKinley said, we don't often try escape cases for the reason that he made clear. What's critical to this analysis, first of all, Your Honors, is the fact that the standard here is clearly erroneous. And critical with that is the fact, very well stated in the record, that the district court judge did consider the adjustment for the acceptance of responsibility. If he had said as a matter of law, a person who goes to trial cannot get this adjustment, that would be erroneous as a matter of law. But Judge McKinney did not do that. he considered the issues that were raised by Woods, and he determined that they did not fit within the very narrow situation in which someone who goes to trial may still maintain the argument that he has accepted responsibility. Despite the way it's being characterized now, what Angela Woods essentially said was, you can't prove these elements of the offense. You can't prove that I was in the custody of the Attorney General. You're not going to be able to prove that I was in the custody of the Director of the Bureau of Prisons. Those are variances between the proof and the indictment, and as the district judge found, and as this court has found in its earlier case law, as I cited in the brief, that's not the type of dispute where a person still can be considered to have accepted responsibility. Angela Woods said, prove this if you can. We did prove it. He was found guilty. At the sentencing hearing, the judge gave careful consideration to his argument, as you can see in the transcript, and decided that he did not fit within the narrow exception that was, by the record, not clearly erroneous. Let me also make clear, despite again being characterized as he turned himself in, he did not turn himself in. That's a factor, but essentially what happened is, and this is in the record, his mother called the FBI, then they called the Marshals Service. They found out where he was. They went to where he was in Manhattan. He certainly did not refuse an arrest, did not in any way contest his status. He acquiesced in the arrest, but did not turn himself in. And so that's an important consideration. With respect to the second issue, Your Honors, the case law is very clear. I think critical to this court's reconsideration, if you will, are Judge Mannion's questions having to do with the nature of the facility. And the focus for giving the adjustment are situations where you have a community corrections type facility, the type of facility that Judge Mannion alluded to, where people are on furlough, where people are actually working in the community, they check out for the day. I know in every district there are places like this where federal prisoners are held, a community correction center, as mentioned in the guidelines. In those situations, there's a very different situation than at the federal prison camp. The case that this court dealt with in the Stallbaum case was a federal prison camp in Oxford, Wisconsin, exactly the same scenario as Terre Haute. There is no perimeter in the formal sense, but again, in response to Judge Manning's question, Angela Woods had no authority to leave at any time. He couldn't go to work in the community and then come back.
Well, that was agreed upon. He said he didn't have that right.
I understand. Okay. So the government would ask this court to affirm its previous holding in the Stallbaum case, which again is consistent with every other circuit that has dealt with this issue. And we would ask with respect to the first issue, the acceptance of responsibility denial, to find that the district judge did not clearly err in making the findings that he did. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. 1 minute, sir.
Two points I want to address. First of all, I'm not sure I can agree with Mr. Warden's description of the judge's consideration of the issue of acceptance of responsibility. The judge's statements during sentencing suggest that the judge was categorically excluding him because of he viewed his defense here as one challenging the elements of the offense, and that he should be categorically excluded. So I don't think the judge actually considered this as a possibility. The other point that Mr. Warden suggested that Mr. Woods did not voluntarily turn himself in, we in fact, that was the way the pre-sentence report initially read, that they had to come down and pick him up. However, we submitted an objection to that, and the judge ultimately adopted our statement as to how it happened, that he in fact had called his mother. His mother had called the marshals, but he actually called the FBI in New York and awaited their arrival and surrendered without incident. If the court has no further questions, I see my time has expired. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, counsel.